I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Ben Lawver. Welcome, Ben.
Nice to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to sit down.
Well, it's nice to meet one of the two new councillors on the City of Fremantle, and congratulations on being elected to the ward of Hilton.
Yeah, thank you. It's a great area out there. You should come out and visit sometime.
once owned a house in Hilton. Yeah. My uncle and his wife and my cousins all grew up in Hilton.
Oh, yeah.
Back when it was just after the war, it was a garden suburb.
Brand new.
Yeah,
all new housing then.
Interesting. But it's quite a vibrant suburb, Hilton, isn't it?
It is. And the ward itself, the Hilton ward, is actually only about half of the Hilton suburb. And then it includes Sampson and O'Connor. So those are also very kind of distinct areas. But, the Hilton part is where I live. And, it's definitely, it's a great place to be. So I encourage you to come back out.
Now, Sam, I said, Sam, he's your predecessor.
Yes.
I remember once having that conversation with him about the different divisions within the ward of Hilton.
Yeah.
But then you've got an interesting accent. So I'm bound to ask, where did your accent come from, as we always say?
Well, prior to living in Australia, I hailed from Seattle, Washington State. I grew up in the Rocky Mountains in the eastern part of the state, in a little town that no one's ever heard of. It was about 1,200 residents, and we lived outside of that even. So that's where I grew up as a kid, and then moved to the big city of Seattle and the Puget Sound, and then came out to Australia.
To the sort of much flatter than the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah. Well, when people talk about mountains over here, I do have a little chuckle. they're more like foothills, but that's all right.
So you've already had the chance to go to possibly just your first full council meeting.
We had our second one last night.
Second one last night.
Yeah, second one for me. Yeah.
And what committees are you on?
The reason why I ran for council was to, I hopefully ensure that communities have a voice in how they grow and develop. We had an experience out there where our local IGA is currently being replaced by Coles, and despite trying everything that we could to actually have a say in what our community looks like in the future, we really felt like that voice wasn't heard. And so when I was successful in my election, I looked at the different committees as to where we might be able to make some changes to ensure that the next development will have the voice that we lacked in this last one. And so I was able to get on the planning committee. I was elected to the strategic planning and transport committee. And then just last night was elected to the joint development assessment panel committee.
Congratulations.
Well, it's still got to be approved by the minister, but they're forwarding my name, so we'll see how that goes.
So that meant you get to sit on the bigger development applications.
Yeah, I'll be the deputy member on there.
Yes.
So there'll be a bit of a learning. I consider it like an apprenticeship.
Yes.
Because it is a bit of a technical committee. But that was the panel that approved the Coles that is replacing our IGA. So I'm very interested to learn more about how that works.
So was it the IGA redevelopment proposal that got you all geared up for local government, or did you have some longer interest? I imagine you did.
No, to be honest, the community, we really rallied around our local shop. And, when we got to the end and, the development was approved, and we literally found out that we couldn't appeal because
it's JDAP.
That's right. The current system only allows developers to appeal when they're knocked back. And, we read through the planning regs. I read through the local government act, led through the planning act, read through the joint development assessment panel regulations, trying to find some way that we could actually have some say in what we look like. And it just it was really shocking that the process itself seemed to be so skewed towards approving these developments, even though over 2,000 people signed a petition to ask to sit down with this developer, and they just ignored us. They said no, go away. The traffic report that was used to approve this was shockingly bad. In fact, we had it assessed independently, and the first three pages of that traffic report, there were little tick boxes that they say we've done this, we've done that, we've done this. 36 of those items weren't even included in the report or were wrong. They relied on old data. So there was a lot of problems with this specific development. But in the end, it did get approved. But when I did all that research and was reading through the different acts and the local planning regs, that's where I found a few things that I think we could make some changes. So like I said, so the next development, the community could actually have a stronger voice.
Yep. So what's your own background that gets you involved in and analyzing that? What skills do you bring to this new job?
Well,
apart from all that passion.
Yeah, well, I've always been someone that loves diving into the detail on things, and I currently work as a research officer, so I get to do that quite a bit. And during that time, I'd actually had taken a year off from work just before COVID hit. I'd
right.
taken a year off, so it was, I guess, kind of good timing in that regard to do some work around the house. So I had some spare time throughout the day to do this reading and researching and then also still get the work done around the place that I needed to.
And when you say a research officer, what does a research officer do?
Whatever I'm asked to. It's a wide range of stuff, and unfortunately I can't really go into detail about what I'm doing because it could...
It's all policy stuff, is it?
Yeah, it could form policy, it could form questions, or in a prior employer, it might be writing press releases based on it. You could be, you know, writing reports that then get issued to ministers or stuff like that. So,
yeah. Oh, well, that sounds generally relevant and makes it the local government a more familiar place for you, I suppose.
Well, it's a bit like drinking from a fire hose. I've said that a lot in these past 5 weeks have been, you know, there's a lot of information coming at you. So the skills that I've developed doing that kind of work are coming in a little handy, you know, kind of letting to know what to focus on in the immediate term.
And what has been the immediate challenges, or, you know, where does the volume of the work, the fire hose water, come from?
Gosh, Michael, it's something as simple as if a neighbor or, you know, someone pulls me up and asks me about the noise from the construction that's happening where the IGA was. Who do I contact in the city about what, you know, how do we get, so? Or it's something as simple as, you know, trees being pruned, and how do you get that done? So it's such a wide range of different things at the moment that, it's pretty much everything is brand new, trying to figure it out.
And that includes the most local of... sort of local complaints. You'll get a call on your mobile, or how does that work?
I'll get a call, I'll get a Facebook message.
Because you're also open these days, aren't you? There's an email through the council, there's a mobile number, which presumably is a council phone, and you know that it's...
It's my personal phone.
Oh, it's your personal phone.
Yeah.
So when it rings, if you don't recognise a name, you can have a bet that you've got a constituent who wants to talk to you.
That or someone offering unsolicited financial investment advice from via Queensland or something, yeah.
Well, I've had Australian Criminal Intelligence trying to arrest me twice last week.
Oh, wow, yeah. Yeah, the ATO, you're trying to tell me I need to pay them in gift cards, all that stuff.
Yeah, amazing. So do you have, apart from the IGA and trying to keep an eye on its redevelopment, mm-hmm. and anything like it that comes along, do you have particular aims and ambitions? Are there things for Hilton or for Fremantle more generally that you're anxious about, or you want to keep an eye on, or you want to engineer in a certain direction?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you've really got to pick your battles in that. I mean, there's lots of things that could be improving, and dealing with the issues that come, you know, just from local residents actually does take quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
So if I can have a mark on that process of how developments are assessed, and ideally give the community a mechanism so that way a developer can't just ignore 2,000 people when they want to sit down and talk and work through issues. But there are other things, you know, like the canopy coverage, you know, around Fremantle, there's a big push to get to 20%, and where I live in Hilton, blocks are getting split all the time, and oftentimes that comes at a loss for good mature trees. So I'd like to see if we can't find a way to encourage retention of those trees, you know, whether that's through a lease arrangement with the city, or there's a significant tree register that's in existence, but that has requires someone to be extremely proactive and all that. So I'd just like to see what we can do in that space, because there is some value to having nice mature trees, and in addition also planting more. But if you cut down all the ones that currently exist, it takes a while for the little ones to grow up. Also supporting local small business.
No, I noticed that was one of your campaign platforms.
Absolutely.
The supporting small business. How does that work? Because we all want small businesses everywhere to work. Is there something in particular that that you or the council, City of Fremantle, can positively do?
So there's in light industrial area in O'Connor.
O'Connor, which is probably part of your ward as well, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah, it is. And there's, a lot of businesses out there that are kind of light industrial and all that. And then there's also like a shopping strip. And even the McDonald's on South Street is part of the Hilton Ward. So there's quite a diverse group of businesses just out there. But also there's the there was a lot of comment when I was doorbelling about the empty storefronts in Fremantle.
You mean in the center of Fremantle?
In Frio. And so even though that's not directly impacting the ward where I live, it's something that people that live in Fremantle do notice and do care about. And I know the mayor is going to institute a business summit as to what we can do in that space.
Yeah, great idea.
Yeah, one of the places that I live, Tacoma, they had a great program because they faced a similar issue with their downtown where the storefronts were all empty. It kind of created some urban decay. And it was a program called Spaceworks where they partnered with, the landlords and then businesses, and they got these businesses in there. And it did a treat. It revitalized that downtown area. Some of the businesses have moved on to other places. Some weren't successful, but some are still running today. And that program was about 15 years ago. Mm. So if there's ways that we can, it's a different country, different laws and all sorts of things. But if there's ways that we can...
Well, we're not unique, Fremantle. Yeah. Not in Western Australia, not in Australia, not in the world. Cities do go through cycles.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's fascinating that you are able to find these examples. Something good will come out of it.
Yeah.
So there's the tree canopy.
Mm-hmm.
There's the city centre revitalization.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other things that you want to see right on the agenda?
Well, fitting in with ensuring communities have a voice in how they grow and develop is the work in port. I was fortunate to be on the Westport Task Force, and I served on the environmental work stream and the freight and logistics work streams.
Yes.
So I focused in on those two areas. Also, I've been a member of the Port Operations Task Force, which is just kind of the monthly meeting of all the people that use the port, and even represented on the Freight and Logistics Council.
Yes.
So there's a few things there. And from that experience, I've really taken away that there really is no need to rush and build a new port and probably most likely destroy Coburn Sound. And also the fact that the port is more than just an economic engine for Fremantle and WA. It's actually part of why I live here, to be honest. Seattle's a port city. It's right in the downtown area. There's a working port. Tacoma is a port city. Vancouver, BC, they have a port right in the heart of the city. And when I came to Fremantle, it kind of felt like home. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that really enjoy having that port as part of the fabric that makes up Fremantle unique. It's not just South Cottesloe. And so I'd really like to ensure that as we plan for the future, that it's done on a basis of, I guess, a necessity. And major infrastructure should be done when we need it, not rushing into things. And so I'd like to ensure that process is upfront.
Well, it sounds like you recognize, whether or not accept, that the state government's made decisions or very close to signing off on business cases to move the commercial port south to Kwinana, or do you not take that as a given? Just a question of timing.
The state government will do what the state government does. And I think as a resident of Fremantle, we've lost the Dockers. if we lose the port, I think it's got to be very, very, it would be interesting to see what their plan is for the future. When I was on the West Ports Task Force, a report that said, basically replacing port operations with housing and tourism, as they want to do, would make traffic worse than if the port stayed. And traffic, mind you, was the number one reason why they justified moving it. So replacing the port with traffic and tourism will make that worse. I asked the question, what are we going to do? That doesn't make any sense to me. And that was just basically ignored. Of the options that Westport shortlisted, the five options, those were the five worst ranked for environmental outcomes. Like, literally at the bottom of all 32 long list options. And now there's talk about how there's going to be the most environmental option. So those are the kind of questions that I have about, it's not actually the best environmental outcome. That was keeping the port in Fremantle. Any issue that was raised in the Westport process, there was much cheaper, more sustainable options to deal with it than tearing out the identity of Fremantle and moving it down to Coburn.
Well, as you say, the whole project some way down the track in one sense, because big infrastructure projects like that which is involved take years to bring on. But then again, 10 or 20 years is a quick time. It doesn't take that long.
It can. And, you know, if I, you know, objectively look at the port situation, you know, the Westport also never considered the livestock trade, the bulk in general, or the Roro. Well, they did a little bit on the Roro operations, but those three, that was excluded from their remit early on, which I found very odd. So their whole business case, one, is based on only containers, not the other trades. And two, their modeling, their predictions actually envision a future where every person that's alive today and ones that aren't yet to be born in Western Australia, we're going to have to purchase three times as many goods from overseas as we do today. And when I just ask that basic question, like, I mean, that's fine if that's the future that people are planning for, but that's a fundamentally different economy, you know, than what we have right now. And so I asked them the question as to what are they actually planning for? They couldn't give me an answer. So,
well, it sounds to me like there's going to be some interesting discussions, if not in the Fremantle Council, but certainly round about as the years go by while you're there. Coming back to something much more local, and you were talking about representing just the, if you like, the ambitions of people in the Hilton ward. Are there particular challenges? You've mentioned small business, but in the way people live their lives, is the ward something that's being held back? Are there other things that can be done? Are there greater commercial opportunities? Is there a need for more sort of lifestyle infrastructure in Hilton? Or is it pretty much happy and doesn't want to be intruded upon too much?
Well, I mean, the Hilton folks that live there generally were a pretty good lot. but, you know, it is the garden suburb. And it's gone through a bit of a transformation in the past 8 to 10 years or so, where there's been a lot of blocks that have been split and a lot of, you know, trees that have been cut down. And there's a lot of focus on the heritageness of the precinct. Mm. But that focus on the heritage has been just on the original cottages and not on the, necessarily any emphasis on the garden part of it.
You mean the layout?
Well, the retention of the mature trees and the things that make it the garden suburb that it is.
That's interesting.
And so there's a growing sense within the community that part of the garden precinct is kind of slipping away, and that's at the expense of people buying blocks, splitting them, and cutting down a lot.
Well, they're very large quarter acre blocks originally.
Thereabouts.
I mean, everywhere around Perth's being made more dense in that way. Mm-hmm. Is there a pushback against subdivision, or is it really a question, as you put it, of thinking about the tree canopy policy and thinking about the garden suburb notions?
You know, it's really, I have received a few messages since being elected about what can we do about the massive subdivisions, because there's been quite a few that even are a bit questionable in my mind. I mean, you have a corner block and people squeeze three houses on. And generally speaking, when that happens, it seems to be a developer or someone that doesn't live in the community trying to maximize their profits. And I think if people want to split their block, personally, I look more favorably if it's someone who lives there and has an intention of living there, because then the chances are they're going to split their block as a part of building their own place, and part of their own place is the broader community. And so those kinds of divisions in my mind tend to reflect more about what the community is about versus just maximizing profits.
Now, there was a lot of attention given in all the campaigning recently when people went to the local government elections to elect a new mayor, and there was a lot of competition for the various ward seats available, probably not so much in yours, but in some of the other areas.
I had two opponents. there were three of us.
Well, I heard early on that Ben Lovell looked like he was, if not assured, was going to do well. But all that aside, you've suddenly got all these new friends. You now sit on a council with all of these colleagues. You will have known some, but you're getting to know everybody.
Yeah, I've been trying to reach out and sit down and, you know, engage with everyone on an individual and kind of in our groups with committees and stuff like that as well. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's I think everyone on the council really comes to the council with the best of intentions and a real positive vision for Fremantle, so that's exciting. I don't think anyone that I've had the inexperience to,
yes,
to convince me otherwise.
Yes. So. No, it's wonderful that people put their hands up for public office like this. So, yeah, that's my experience too. In terms of the time you expect it to take, is this going to impinge on your otherwise busy work life and everything else that goes on it?
It is quite a time commitment, Michael. I will admit that. But part of it is also, I think, just being new myself. So something that an experienced counselor might be able to get done in, you know, a shorter period of time because they've done it before. I'm still learning and figuring all that out, but that's how I learn best, is by actually doing.
And have the problem put in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm welcoming all the questions and comments that the community has because it helps me figure out how to navigate the city of Fremantle and to get results. So, yeah.
Ben, one of the big questions over the last number of years relates to the city's finances, its revenue, its expenditure, and there have been some well-known, probably trenchant critics of the old King Square, Wallalup Court redevelopment and the like. Do you have any sort of particular sort of prior held view about finances?
No, I don't. I mean, all those decisions were well and truly made down the track. And I think I did have my first induction of the new building, and it's quite a nice building. And when you look out at the church or you see the activity that's down there now, that little laneway that goes to the formerly Rosie O'Grady's and now Federal again, it feels like a much nicer space.
It's got a nice feel to it.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And so, you know, hopefully that's the spark that's needed to kind of help revitalize Fremantle as a whole, or helps, you know, contribute to that. So there's a lot of different projects going on. And so I think the finances for the city took a big hit with COVID. And the reality is it's because they've done what they were supposed to do, and that is diversify, and a large stream of revenue is parking. And that obviously dried up. And then you add in a few other things. And so it's, you know, the council, I think, has dealt with it the best that they could. I haven't really dived into the finances and read every, you know, line every little thing. But, you know, from my experience is no matter what the issue is, people can probably always do better. But when I ran, I told people on the doors, we have no money. You know, I'm not saying that we're going to...
You're not promising anything.
Yeah, well, you know, there's it is an expense to build that building. And so what I'm excited about is to see if we can actually, the services that are currently being delivered by the city, is it what the community wants? And are they being delivered in the most effective and efficient manner? Because that's where I think we can maybe actually work to do things maybe a little differently, or maybe people don't actually want what the city is doing, and then those funds can be redirected into things that people actually want. So,
well, often it's good advice when you take up a new job to be diligent, get to work, but wait for a good 6 months before you finally decide whether there are particular things you want to embark out on. So it'll be interesting to talk to you in about 6 months' time to see how it's all going. But thanks for talking to us today.
Oh, I appreciate your time.
And best of luck with what you're doing. Local government's important. I see they're about to introduce some more local government changes. Have you come to grips with all of that?
I've read through it, and a lot of it has to do with reporting and transparency, which is quite good. And I think, you know, the more transparency you can bring to, you know, any sort of public area, the better. And then there's some other things that I noticed during the campaign that I felt were maybe questionable. And I've actually asked some questions of the city dealing with the owners and occupiers role, I've put some things in that hopefully the council will reach a position and will make a formal comment on it. But things
is that to do with who can vote?
Yes. Sorry. So that's included in this Local Government Reform Act. But there were 22 ballots mailed to one PO box in South Fremantle. And, you know, I just got a question if all those people actually have access to that PO box. You know, people registering at their own home as an owner and being registered to vote. So there was a lot of things that I felt maybe that owner and occupier list could be scrutinized better. And a lot of it also has to do with the timing of when those applications come in. So in Fremantle, there was a big effort to turn in registrations, and a lot of them were not accepted because they, for whatever reason. But even with those ones that weren't accepted, there's still a lot that kind of got through that I've raised my voice, and I've asked the questions like, is this legitimate? I mean, because if it's legitimate, great. I'm all for participating in democracy. I want everyone to vote. But in some instances, I think the intention may have been less than honorable. So,
well, we'll look forward to hearing the answers to your questions down the track.
Great.
Well, thanks very much.
All right. Thank you, Michael. And